welcome to the damage report. I am not John Iadarola. Dragon Daddy is no longer here. And you have evil stepmother dragon. Yeah, that's right. Not gonna be fun. No more Frantastic Mondays, y'all. We're getting into it. We got a lot to cover. It is, our lineup is fuller than a diaper. Yeah, that is foreshadowing. What's going on? I'm Francesca Fiorentini, if you don't know who I am. And I'm so happy because there wasn't a Friday last week because it was Thanksgiving to be welcoming to Mondays, Mr. Brett Ehrlich.
Oh, it's so nice to see you, everybody. Is this thing on? Is anybody? Here's my prop joke to start off the show. It's a turkey leg for those listening to the podcast. This bit was worth it because I can see Sophie Morrison, the producer, literally facepalming, now doubled over in full on righteous embarrassment, which is the appropriate response. I'm not going to eat this on camera, but Brett, off camera.
You saved the turkey leg just to do this bit.
Yes. Absolutely. I didn't make soup with it. The first thing that Francesca said on our like back and forth this morning was use every part of the turkey. And I'm like, oh my God, she's a communist, even in DMs.
I broke my vegetarianism to eat turkey. So there's commitment for you. I'm not committed. I'm terrible. No, you gotta make soup. It's delicious.
No, absolutely. And turkeys are vegetarian, so they're only once removed.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're that dry of a bird, you qualify for being a vegetable.
That's what I didn't like about everyone's Twitter this weekend. It was like, I'm gonna take the opportunity to talk trash about turkey being dry. It's like, well, then cook it better. Yes. Cook it better.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't have to be dry. You can find a way, baste it.
Yeah,
or butter. Something like that. Butter. Yeah, cover it in gravy. It's great. Mm-hmm. Everyone's pretending that they don't like Thanksgiving dinner. It's like, no, it's just contrarian for its own sake. And then everyone became it. And now it's just annoying. I love turkey. I'm making like other versions of it, like combinations. I made an open faced turkey sandwich. It's so good.
Yeah, you could make an actual like a Thanksgiving sandwich, you know? Just sprinkle a little bit of like, you know, colonial settlements on top of the cranberry sauce and all that. It's just perfect. You can get in everything.
Brett, can I get a small pox? Can I get a small pox?
Yeah, to go. Brett, we have so much to get to. My God, we're talking about the Biden administration. We're talking about RNC scrambling in Georgia. And of course, a very, very full diaper. Are you ready to get to it?
Absolutely. And happy anniversary, John. That's why he's not here.
Oh, yeah. Happy anniversary. I can't remember. Is this a wedding anniversary?
One wedding. Yeah, people do that when they get married. They just say, I don't care how long we dated.
Oh.
One year.
Interesting. Crazy. Yeah. Wow. This year has flown by. Holy crap. That was a year ago. All right. We're living in the no time region. Okay. Let's get to it. Lame duck Trump is the lamest of all the ducks, clearly. Just the scariest version of Trump we could have possibly imagined. And I know that's very difficult, but with the amount of pardons and executions and last minute pieces of legislation that this administration is trying to ram through before they leave/don't leave/maybe, you know, just mutter their way out or into a bunker like the family in Parasite. There's a lot that this administration is trying to get done. Let's begin with pardons. Over the Thanksgiving holiday, there was not only the pardoning of a turkey, but the pardoning of Michael Flynn. Michael Flynn, of course, who pled guilty to lying to the FBI, who is Trump's former national security advisor. And this is in addition to the long list of friends, loyalists, cronies, and conservative celebrities who have received pardons. You all remember Joe Arpaio. You all remember Roger Stone, also indicted for his work around the 2016 sort of Russia conspiracies. And I don't know, the witch from Snow White probably got a pardon at this point from Trump. But This was on the 25th of November, right before Thanksgiving. Trump super happy tweeting, "It is my great honor to announce that General Michael T. Flynn has been granted a full pardon. Congratulations, General Flynn and his wonderful family. I know you will now have a truly fantastic Thanksgiving." Brett, you saw this coming.
Yeah, absolutely. What I love the most about this is our dear friend Michael Flynn pled guilty. Like, there's all those things like Trump, if you pardon yourself, there's people in QAnon who are mad about pardons like this because it implies that the person was guilty. And they think they're so not guilty that it's bad that you're calling them guilty and acknowledging any guilt at all. That's different when Michael Flynn pleads guilty. I believe it was twice.
Yes.
Like, I feel like that's more responsible for the appearance of guilt, is when he tells people, "Yes, I did it." And I guess this is all we can expect from the Trump administration. Like, the best we can hope for, as it's lowered every other expectation, the expectation that, like, someone who said they did it would stay in jail for it. But I get it. Yeah. We got him. He did suffer some kinds of consequences for a little while. So I'll take what I can get. I'm more concerned with the dismantling of democracy. But I will point out that is the central theme of the Trump end of administration. And yes, pretty much the entire time, is to get people not to acknowledge reality. They yes. want people to reject that the votes happened and we have 80 million pieces of evidence saying Trump lost, but also he said he was guilty. That's reality, and they want to undo it.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, Trump is not actually a president who's given that many pardons. It's just who he's actually pardoned. Like, Obama, I think, had at this point offered more clemency to more, and clemency is different, so the charge still stays, but the pardon completely absolves you. There is no more charge. So that is what he's done in this case and what he did in the Roger Stone case. He's mostly just pardoned his homies, not like people who were convicted for nonviolent drug offenses. And by homies, I do mean crooks and cronies. This is pretty striking in the amount that Trump has done and he's trying to do in the last final waning months of his presidency. He's executed a lot of federal prisoners. So 8 people have been put to death in less than 5 months, and 5 more executions are planned before the end of President Trump's administration. Those numbers stand in harsh contrast to the 3 people executed by the federal government in the previous 50 years. So just think about that. That is what? That's I can do math. 12 people who are going to be, yeah, that's 12 people who are going to be executed in the final months of Trump's administration, compared to the 5 that have been executed or the 3 that have been executed in the last 50 years. That's insane. And we know that Biden coming into the White House has promised to actually work to end the death penalty. In fact, I think that's might be one of his executive orders, but definitely on a federal level.
Yeah, I am with ending the death penalty. I just think that, for obvious reasons, I don't think we need to go into, but like, you can never tell if you were right about that person doing it, and I'd rather they stay alive and fight it and be able to overturn that execution than to, or just, or that execution order than to kill them. However, I will also add that in addition to this, one of those things that's been circulating, I think ProPublica added it in one of their like million page long articles, and then it's kind of made its way to different parts of like the internet, which is that Trump is fast tracking the firing squad and the electric chair, because in order to put people to death, typically you have to put this drug cocktail together, which has had tons of bad, you know, bad results, right, where people, it hasn't worked right. And so they made it harder for you to get those drugs in the drug cocktail. So Trump and his cronies have essentially found a way to fast track the bringing back of firing squads, which, like, there is no time in when firing squads happened, those times were bad. Like, we don't want to go back to a time when there ever were firing squads. It just gives you an idea of how archaic and ridiculous the execution. And it's just Trump wanting to be like a big boy. Kid, sure. Maim them, dismember them.
Right. I mean, what are we going to go back to, hanging, you know, the guillotine? Maybe not that bad. You know, hey, jury's still out. No, but there is clearly no humane way to execute someone. We've seen that. You just mentioned the drug cocktails. But yes, going back to like bizarre, you know, 18th century methods of killing people in the year 2020. Here we go. When they're dying because of your recklessness and a global pandemic. But yes, that is, Brett has mentioned, the last thing that we want to talk about in, you know, this lame duck period and this literal senioritis that Trump is experiencing right now, which is all of these final pieces of legislation, which are unclear whether it's legislation. It's mostly just laws that he is enacting through his various agencies and you know, in multiple realms. So Brett mentioned the firing squad trying to bring back, and electrocutions for federal executions, and giving the government more options for administering capital punishment as drugs used in lethal injections as they become unavailable. But in addition to that, we've got, anyone had salmonella? I've had salmonella. I've had something very similar to salmonella. Don't ever order just like broccoli at like a bad Chinese food restaurant. Take it from me. But suddenly it's going to be a lot easier to get salmonella, in case you wanted to know what it's like to go to the bathroom 100 times in a day. 6 days after President Trump lost his bid for re-election, the US Department of Agriculture notified food safety groups that it was proposing a regulatory change to speed up chicken factory processing lines. Remember, these are also places where COVID is rampant. A change that would allow companies to sell more birds. An earlier USDA effort had broken down on concerns that it could lead to more worker injuries and make it harder to stop germs like salmonella. Yum yum, gotta get that in real quick.
I just want to say on the food safety, there are already multiple countries that are just like, we're gonna pass on American food. Like, we're still gonna eat, you know, pizza and burgers and stuff. We're just gonna make it from other people's beef and pork because you guys are crazy. Yeah. As much as the right laments food safety regulations that slow down business, everyone else is much better at this than we are. Like, we might have some stupid regulations. I will admit that. But these ones aren't stupid. Like, they're making it so literally there can be more poop in your food. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to see the poop. Like, that's literally a law they passed, or that they, you know, executive ordered into existence, which, you know, just like traces of poop is fine. As long as you can't see visual poop. Meanwhile, we're gonna speed up the carcasses. So you're watching them like this, like cars on a freeway. So even if there would have been visible poop, they're moving so fast that it's just blurry. Maybe that was poop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I always like blurry poop. Blurry poop is better than, I mean, the best is no poop.
Yeah.
But if you're gonna have poop, make it blurry. It's exactly right. Also, like, how much money are we talking? You know, these are already places that have been shut down due to COVID and, you know, putting their workers at risk. They've had multiple deaths, like, and now they just want to speed everything up and take fewer precautions. I'm going back to my vegetarianism, Brett. I mean, after the turkey and the whatever poop it did or did not contain, I'm just going back to veggies and legumes. We got immigration, environment, and environmental concerns that Trump's trying to ram through in the last minute. November 13th, and now he announced that the citizenship test will include questions about American history and politics, more questions, and basically increase the number of questions from 100 to 128. And the administration also proposed a rule that would limit work permits for immigrants awaiting deportation, but not yet in custody. So essentially, rock in a hard place, you can't work. You're not actually being detained, but you can't actually work anywhere. You're not a threat to anyone. No one's detained you, but you still can't work. On the environment, also on November 13th, there's a new rule, this is random, to restrict pension managers from considering social and environmental impacts when choosing investments, right? So otherwise you can't choose to invest in not dirty fossil fuel companies. And another Labor Department rule would make it easier for companies like Uber to withhold benefits by classifying workers as independent contractors instead of full employees. Hello, California, and however millions of dollars, billions of dollars went into that. That proposition. finally, the Bureau of Land Management is going to start auctioning acres of public land, more public land off to drilling, starting at $2 an acre on 445,000 acres of public land, with leases to sale to energy companies through the Bureau of Land Management. The leases could expand dramatically and allow oil and gas drilling on an additional 6.8 million acres of the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska, a habitat for bears, musk oxen, caribou, and birds. And also, the Interior Department is going to open up drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Yay.
Are there turkeys?
It's just like so on the nose. You know, it's like, what are things that Republicans do? Let's drill in the Arctic, kill some caribou. Let's make it like food dirtier so I can make like $9 extra, you know. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And it's and let's leave no ambiguities as to who's gonna benefit from that. Not the people working at the factories. All of these, like with the food safety, it's to have fewer employees checking things on the line. It's to make it so that the government stays out of the buildings. It's to do all this horrible, horrible stuff. It's to make it so that people in cities where most humans live are underrepresented and underfunded so that they can't get what they need to survive. Yeah. That's the point.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. And I will say that, like, last thing about it for me is essentially like there is not just the scariness of a lame duck president. There is the scariness, the more frustrating scariness of a lame duck Congress. Congress is reconvening today for about 10 days. So on the 10th day till Christmas, what's my Congress gonna give to me? We need to be shaking their trees every single minute of every single day, because last time they got together, all Mitch did was confirm judges. Did they give you any COVID aid? No, $0. The only thing they're gonna approve is a military budget. And the only question about whether they'll approve it is whether or not it renames Confederate named bases.
Yep.
That's the only thing they're arguing about. We need to get on the phone immediately and call your Congress people and other people's Congress people and essentially convince them that, like, you know how you previously, when the first round of COVID happened and you did say we actually needed money to get by? Well, we're just as high, and we're actually higher in terms of COVID infections than we were before. So you need to step up, you need to step in, and you need to give us a little bit more, a tiny bit more to get through this. Otherwise, what they're gonna do is, I mean, otherwise the play for McConnell is to sabotage the economy and say, no, you got some Democrats, they run it under the ground. Don't let them get away with it.
I mean, it's really interesting because remember the line before the election was from Republicans, oh, as soon as Democrats win, if they win, COVID will disappear and they're never gonna mention it again. Yeah. Obviously that didn't happen because Democrats generally care more about reality. But I wouldn't be surprised that if and when Biden assumes office, you'll have Republicans going like, COVID is real. Our people are dying out there. You know, as a little bit of a bait and switch. I mean, I hope, but they will absolutely squarely blame any kind of economic recession that was based on their inability to act and actually help people and extend unemployment benefits or moratoriums on evictions or PPP loans. They're gonna put that all in the Democrats' court. But of course, block any actual movement on it. But rhetorically, they're gonna blame them.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
With all the pardons, Brett, I have to ask, because apparently it's not illegal to do this, but do you think that Trump will try and pardon himself?
Sure. That's a great question. And what are the two sides of it? One is no, I don't need to pardon myself. I'll be able to do that in my next term, which I'm trying to secure. The other approach is I don't need to pardon myself. I guess there's three. I don't need to pardon myself because I didn't do anything wrong. But the third he'll go with is probably something like, I'm pardoning myself for things I didn't do because I didn't do them, but the rabid Democrats who are already pretending I'm not president are gonna be after me. So he always does this thing that like secures him something
actually and then pretend something else is going on. So he's actually would be securing himself clemency for any federal crimes, not state crimes. So the New York circuit, whatever, can do whatever they want. But you know, tax evasion in New York State. But he's gonna pretend it's all just because it's rigged, and I don't need to do it anyway.
Right. So essentially, the pardon would be for something like the Stormy Daniels hush payments, but the tax fraud in the state of New York cannot pardon himself for. I'm just trying to understand it.
Yeah, like federal crime. So like things are like, is he gonna pardon Kyle Rittenhouse? Well, that is there's a couple federal crimes there, like you know, taking something from one state to another, but the murder charge is state. So right. You can't pardon him for the murder charge.
Right, right, right.
As it stands now.
Yeah, and this is the thing, it's like, you know, there's even takes now that are like, well, Trump, you know, he wouldn't do that because it's a bridge too far, you know, like he's got some respectability. It's like, what? Have we been watching the same guy for the last 4 years? If he can do it, he will do it. He could just, I mean, he thinks it's like a get out of jail free card, just like a little, like, you know, with the guy with the stripes, the Monopoly man, he's gonna just take that with him, I think.
Yeah.
And use it, and it might not work. But he can also pardon his family members, the list goes on. We shall see. Will it be Kyle Rittenhouse? Will it be Julian Assange? Not sure.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The still president, Donald Trump, gave his first press conference since losing the election. He was in the Oval Office, and it was a day near to the days where he suffered losses in Pennsylvania as the Supreme Court threw out the final contestation of that election from the Trump team. Wisconsin recounts in multiple counties showed that Joe Biden won. In fact, he won by a little bit more than he originally had been counted to win. And Trump was asked about whether he will concede and about when the Electoral College does vote, if he will actually concede. Let's go to that side.
Just to be clear, if the Electoral College votes for Joe Biden, will you concede?
Well, if they do, they made a mistake, because this election was a fraud. Just so you understand, this election was a fraud. I mean, they have Biden beating Obama on Obama's vote in areas that mattered in terms of the election in swing states. No, I can't say that at all. I think it's a possibility. They're trying to look between you people. Don't talk to me that way. You're just a lightweight. Don't talk to me that way. I'm the president of the United States. Don't ever talk to the president that way.
I mean, not for long. Like, are you though?
That's how presidents talk, by the way. That's exactly it. They're like my third grade teacher when someone pees on the carpet. That's right. It.
Excuse That's me, did you ask for a hall pass? Did you ask for a hall pass? Well, don't look at me like that. I can't do anything. We'll
the
see.
Only
I
thing, mean, the only petulant thing he didn't do is pronounce the R in president like a W. Don't talk to me. I'm the president.
But so clearly he's upset. Clearly he knows all of his legal cases are imploding before his very eyes. But there was one detail of this press conference, and you might have seen it in that little clip, which is that his arms were strangely high, that his elbows were a little bit high up on that desk. And that is because that desk was tiny, a weensy little desk. Look at this photo, and it's just comically small. Like the flag behind him seems to be bigger than the desk itself. His knees seem to be touching like the top of the desk. His elbows are just like raised as he's, you know, continuing to say it's fraud. And that soon became the story of his first press conference back after this loss, right? Is that the tiny desk. So many a fun meme. We have a play school meme. Yes, Diaper Don with signable executive orders. My first border wall. I love it. A couple of others. Brett, you tweeted one out that was
Yeah, Brett went a little crazy with the Photoshop this weekend. So this is one. I always thought it looked like he was sitting on a toilet.
It really does.
So I added a toilet and what I assume would be his toilet paper holder. And then this other one, just to accentuate how much he looked like a kid at a birthday party asking for a crayon so he could fill out his coloring book. What an insanely petulant schmuckle. It's his first press conference where he took questions. I need to remind everybody, it isn't his first press appearance. His first press appearance was a 1 minute appearance to brag that the stock market rallied to 30,000 after it was pretty much assured that he would lose.
This is, I haven't been on since that happened. Like, isn't it, we're just clearly not in the same reality. Whereas like the Republicans are like, you see, huzzah. And you're like, yeah. The day that the transition office was like, fine, you can use the money that we have to bring in Biden. Like that was the moment that the stock market rallied, was when it was clear this administration would most likely leave.
Yeah, it's so true. And we all have problems with the stock market being like, yaha, same old, same old. That's a separate discussion from this one.
Sure.
And when you say like, they're trying to deny reality. That's it. That's the strategy, is to insulate everyone from the reality. What realities? Realities that like right now, sorry, someone honked at me but realities like the one that says that, listen, the Democrats wanna give, I don't care what the party name is, but the Democrats wanna get you COVID stimulus and the Republicans want you to say, well, this is all just a power grab from the Democrats. What?
Yeah,
grab that power if $1,200 makes its way to the bank account so people can't buy food right now.
Yes, absolutely. Well, soon after this press conference, there was a trending hashtag. And that is because for those who zoomed in or got this press conference from a different angle and watching just how the president was seated at his tiny desk in his tiny chair, it appeared that he could only sit there, or that the chair itself accentuated a certain portion of his body that we've been talking about for a little bit of time because it looks extra stuffed. The hashtag Diaper Don, y'all, was trending because as you can see there, if you can see, for those of you who saw this, Trump's booty was protruding, okay? His booty was protruding and it was sticking out of the little coattails of his jacket. And it was just on swole, okay? It was, he got a thickie and I'm just gonna say it. And I don't know whether it's natural or whether he's using something to stuff it. And ergo, Diaper Don started massively trending. And as you all know, hashtag show me the undies. If he actually doesn't wear diapers, just show us your big boy pants. That was a perfect excuse for me to tweet that. But Trump did take notice that Diaper Don was trending and himself tweeted, Twitter is sending out totally false quote trends that have absolutely nothing to do with what's really trending in the world. Yes, they make it up and only negative quote stuff. Same thing will happen as Twitter, as is happening to Fox News daytime. Also big conservative discrimination. I mean,
is big conservative discrimination what he calls his booty? Maybe that's it. But I didn't believe it. I think Stephen Miller stuffed inside that waistline. after this press conference, that's how he punishes people on his staff. After the press conference, you just hear from behind him emerge going, oh God, it was so terrible in there.
But I loved it.
I can't believe how big his butt is. So it's not fair to do this to Trump. We can see that, like, he's a tall guy. Like, here's what's frustrating. It's like someone who is so obsessed with looks. Like, he casts people in his administration based on whether they would pass central casting.
Yes.
He has his hair done just so as a branding initiative. And he wears his ties really long to, like, elongate his torso. Who knows? But the one thing it is very clear he doesn't want you to see is just how ginormous his butt is. Like, the only way I can get my knees that high on the toilet is when I'm using the squatty potties. And he
looks like he's in a squatty potty.
So insane. He's like, it's a lot easier. And he's covered America in feces. That's essentially what's happened.
Yeah, and it, granted, we, you know, look, we've all been babies. We all remember what it was like. Anyone who has a dirty diaper is gonna be in a bad mood. So, like, I'm trying to also, like, relate to that, remember what it was like, knowing that maybe one day I will be back into pens. Hey. But, like, you know, we will all be there. But, like, yes, this is someone who's obsessed with his image. And hey, it's fun to once in a while dunk on this authoritarian fascist who lost handily and who refuses to accept reality and who single-handedly destroyed our democracy. But it wasn't too strong to begin with. So, hey, Twitter had a field day. Trump got mad. I say it's news. What of it, y'all? So, a top nuclear scientist in Iran was assassinated on Friday, killed in an alleged assassination that the country's foreign minister linked to Israel. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, considered one of the masterminds of Iran's controversial nuclear program, died after his car was apparently ambushed in a district of East Tehran. There's photos of, like, a shattered windshield and blood, and it's awful. Fakhrizadeh was head of the research center of a new technology in the elite Revolutionary Guards and was a leading figure in Iran's nuclear program for many years. Several top Iranian officials have condemned the attack and threatened to retaliate. All incredibly scary, but it's important to have the context. Israel has not actually claimed responsibility for this attack, so we don't actually know, but we do know that there is precedent and there is reason to believe that it could be Israel. During the past decade, Iran has accused Israel of killing at least 5 of its nuclear scientists. Fakhrizadeh is considered the most senior and high profile. Western and intelligence services have described him for years as the leader of a covert atomic bomb program halted in 2003, and Netanyahu painted Fakhrizadeh as a central figure in the program during a 2018 public presentation accusing Iran of continuing to seek nuclear weapons. So I want to get into a little bit, there's a lot of context, Brett, so I want to get into a little bit of that. But just so everyone knows, you know, it's not clear that there was a nuclear weapon being developed by Fakhrizadeh or the Iranians at all. We do know that they were seeking nuclear power and they have been seeking nuclear power. But as a source, Israel's not really a solid source to go to when it comes to Iran's nuclear program. But for some better analysis on this, the Trita Parsi is just so solid. He's a co-founder and executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. I want to go to some of his tweets. He says, Israel is a prime suspect because of a few factors. It has the expertise and capacity. It has done it before. It has the motivation. Either way, the assassination and other likely future attacks will harden Iran's position and complicate, if not hinder, the Biden team's attempts to revive diplomacy. And that serves Netanyahu's interests as well. And he says that conducting attacks in Iran has few downsides for Israel. Either Iran lashes out and sparks a broader conflict that sucks in the US, bringing about a US-Iran confrontation that Netanyahu has long sought. And then finally, we're now in a worse situation for the next 50 days. The main impact of attacks of this kind will not be to set back Iran's program, but to render diplomacy for Biden more difficult. Trump will not push back against these attacks. He may even be encouraging and aiding them. So Trita says essentially to buckle up, this could get worse. And remind you, this is about 10 months after one of Iran's top generals, Qasem Soleimani, was also killed by the United States in, like, a massive drone strike. Brett, what do you think? World War III? We going there?
No, I don't think it's World War III. I think this is, it's just, it feels very much like Israel, probably without Donald Trump's knowledge, just going like, I think we can get away with this right now. We know where he is. Let's make a move, because what is it gonna do? Make it less likely that we get into Like make it less likely we get back into a nuclear agreement. Like,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you have the right-wing government of Israel doing something similar to what Trump did by attacking Qasem Soleimani, but it's just weirder. It's not weirder. It's just, it's a scientist this time, someone that they feel is very important in the potential development of nuclear weapons or some other technology. But I think the play here is like Israel going like, what's it going to get? This is going to make things worse. They're probably not going to want to go into an armed conflict. That's just my guess.
Yeah.
I don't think it's much worse now than it was last week. And I think it's just a calculated risk from Israel, but that's pure speculation based on probably the same stuff that the treaty is looking at.
Yeah, I mean, this is, we know Pompeo visited Israel. Apparently now Jared Kushner is headed to Israel to settle something, which could be an indication that maybe the Trump administration didn't know this was going to happen. But again, I think sort of turning a blind eye and being a-okay with it might be along the same lines, although the US might not have been as involved as it has been in the past in terms of seeking and targeting some of these same Iranian scientists. And all of this, I think the real focus has to be about the ways that Israel's trying to thwart diplomacy between the US and Iran, right? And the fact that the legacy of the Obama administration, one of the good things, right, was the Iran deal. And the fact that that took a lot of work, people, right wingers on all sides, right wingers in the US like Tom Cotton hated it. Right wingers like Netanyahu in Israel hated it. Right wingers in Iran hated it. And so the more the right wing is emboldened in these three countries, the farther we are from any kind of diplomacy, the closer we are to pushing Iran to actually develop nuclear weapons. And so it serves Israel in a lot of different ways to push Iran toward a more extreme position, because then it shows to the US that they can't be trusted. So the idea is to break down relations. And the more these crazies are emboldened in every country, the worse, you know, the worse way out of this, the worse, the less of a peaceful way out of this there is.
Right. You got a right wing government in Israel. You got a fundamentalist right wing, you know, even like, you got Ayatollahs in running Iran. The previous calculation that allowed the Iran nuclear deal to happen was that a more moderate group of people replaced the more fundamentalist people in Iran because the sanctions were working and there was faith among the human beings in Iran that weren't part of the government,
yeah,
that you should enter into a deal with the Americans, because we need to alleviate this crippling economic situation. The Obama administration said, sure, let's do it. They got into an agreement which gave Rouhani and more credibility. Things were looking up. That's not to say that there weren't people in Iran that were looking really hard to secretly develop a nuclear weapon. It's just that we had on paper that they were not doing that, and we made it harder for them to do so because we were checking a bunch of places where they probably were making nuclear weapons. In our estimation, we made it harder for them. Now we've just made it easier for them because they're allowed to develop nuclear weapons because they're not in our agreement anymore, so they can do it wherever the hell they please. And that pressure from the people in Iran that were like, listen, we gotta start dealing with the Americans, is only lessened now.
Yes.
Because they're like, fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the only difference. And I don't know, marginally, I think Netanyahu's like, I'm fine with that situation because I need an enemy in Iran that we can all point to say that they're evil and we're good. But marginally, I don't think it makes it that much more dangerous to kill a scientist than killing the top general in the country.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's exactly right. And there are elections coming up in Iran, and so Rouhani might not actually be reelected. And he again was someone who was a more moderate, but staving off some of the more right wingers is gonna be hard. But so far, and this is crazy, right? You consider the US, you know, as Americans, we're always told that Iranians or that Iran, you know, like they're the funders of terrorism and they're unstable. But in this situation, it's Iran that seems to be exercising restraint. They say that there will be some kind of retaliation, but they're not doing it yet. They haven't said what it is yet. there was, you know, obviously some retaliation for the murder of Qasem Soleimani in Syria. And that was sort of like kind of all for show. But again, one more fire that the Trump administration is trying to light, whether by tacit support of Israel, whether which I believe that there was, but trying to usher in and put Biden in a hard place. And we know from the from past experience, the Democrats are not above being baited into war, right? And that they are not above expanding wars and doing all the wrong things when it comes to actually trying to de-escalate. I hope that a Biden administration doesn't take the bait. And I sure as hell hope that, you know, Iran actually sees that maybe, hey, the guy who was vice president when the Iran deal was actually negotiated, he's coming back. So hold on, just wait. But yeah, it is incredibly scary and volatile. And it's a much longer discussion about the entire region and the US's terrible role in it. It is a very important time for both Republicans and Democrats when it comes to who will control the Senate in the new term. And we are all looking at Georgia. Republicans are looking at Georgia, Democrats are looking at Georgia, and these two final runoff votes, elections between John Ossoff and David Perdue, the GOP incumbent, and Kelly Loeffler and Reverend Raphael Warnock. Neither of them got more than 50%. It goes to a runoff. Early voting is starting December 14th, for those who didn't know. And it is frightening Republicans who should have this safely in the bag, but don't. And Ronna McDaniel, the chair of the RNC, went to Georgia to sort of rally support for Loeffler and Perdue. She flailed as she sought to persuade Republicans to vote in the Georgia Senate runoff elections, telling voters seemingly resigned to loss amid false beliefs about election fraud peddled by President Donald Trump that, quote, it's not decided what the outcome will be for the GOP contenders in the Peach State. So let's just listen to this sot and you'll get a better idea of what happened.
Switching the votes, and we should go there in crazy numbers, and they should have won, but then they still.
Yeah, we have to. We didn't see that in the audit, so we've got to just that evidence I haven't seen. So right. We'll wait and see on that.
How are we going to get money and work when it's already decided?
It's not decided. This is the key.
No,
it's not decided.
So the important thing to point out there is someone in the crowd actually asked the chairwoman, why should we vote in this election when it's already been decided? That is the impression that a lot of Republican voters have here in this state because of President Trump's consistent and overwhelming criticism of the way the election was run.
Yeah, it's already decided. Pack it in, whatever. Right, so a woman in the crowd says, how are we gonna work and unite when it's already decided, when we know that votes are, or we believe that voting is fraudulent and that our president has not been reelected. So Republicans are caught between their own lies, and now they need these same voters to turn out for them in this special election. Brett, what are they doing?
I love it so much. This is so tasty. Guys, Republican Trump supporters that watch the damage report, let's just have a moment. Ronna, ignore her. She is part of the establishment. Loeffler, Loeffler, Perdue, they're part of the establishment. Look who has a job still. They're incumbent senators, Kelly and David. Still have a job. Who doesn't have a job anymore due to fraud and rigged elections? Donald Trump. Look who else has a job. Matt frickin' Gaetz, Rubio, Cruz, all of them kept their stupid jobs. They used you.
Yes.
They are so happy that they got to stay in power. And they're very grateful that you came out in droves to support them. But she's the head of the Republican National Committee, Ronna is. She doesn't want Trump around because Trump bucks the establishment, man. Yeah. All she wants is your votes on paper. So she can do what? Get Trump back in office? No, she knows that's already decided because Kemp already stole it from you. And Raffensperger and the whole disgusting cabal of them. And so what you need to do is write Trump's name as big, as bold as possible on your, they're not even gonna give, look, this is how rigged it is. You're gonna go into the election and you know how we've all said, you gotta write Trump's name in. They aren't even, they got rid of the write-in option on the ballot. That's what's happened now. There isn't even a place to write Trump's name in on the ballot. You don't believe me? Go vote, go in there. And what I need you to do is take your ballot and shove it in the face of the poll worker. Spit on it first, because COVID's a myth. Rub it in their face and say, where's my write-in option?
Yes.
That's what you need to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Take your big crayon, scrub all the names out and write DJT. Brilliant.
Donald Genius Trump.
Mm-hmm. Brett's long ironic tirade is actually not too far off from what the president himself is asking to be done in the state of Georgia. He tweeted, why won't Governor Brian Kemp, the hapless governor of Georgia, use his emergency powers, which can be easily done, to overrule his obstinate secretary of state and do a match of signatures on envelopes? It will be a quote, gold mine of fraud and we will easily win the state. So Trump not giving up on the fact that he's lost Georgia and calling for something clearly illegal to be done is distracting from the broader Republican goal of winning the Senate. I mean, and Mitch McConnell's goal of trying to be the obstructionist he was always born to be, that he's been being for a very long time. Because again, I mean, Brett, you're ironically right. Like, they don't really care about Loeffler and Perdue. They want Trump. And Trump is out. Trump is still focused on himself. He's too focused on himself to be focused and the fraud of the election and undermining it in any way possible. So it absolutely makes sense that there would be low voter turnout, or that this would suppress Republican voter turnout in the special election if people don't believe in elections anymore.
Yeah, I mean, my full analysis is there were some people in, there were plenty of people in suburbs who were like, I like my Republican Congress people and I don't like Donald Trump. It's just a bridge too far for sure. My delicate Southern sensibility. Mm-hmm. I like my racism veiled, like my virgin brides. So there's that. But it's, so they're gonna go back. I foresee a bloodbath in Georgia. I think Loeffler and Perdue are gonna get reelected very easily. Mm. But I will fan these flames as hard as I can in order to get them people to stay home. And I think the only argument that we can have against Loeffler and Perdue are these insider trading arguments that are insane. There's an amazing ad from the Midas Touch that's called Nobody Likes Kelly. And it's clips of Matt Gaetz, Doug Collins, Jeanine Pirro, Tucker Carlson, going ham on Loeffler for her insider trading scandals. That if you want to talk about a populist movement in the Republican Party, you can't make that argument with her, because her husband owns the New York Stock Exchange. Like, that's a thing. He does that. Like, he owns it. And
I didn't even know there was an owner.
No, exactly. I hate to, you know, quote. Yeah, like Bill Maher was even like, that sounds like something from an Adam Sandler movie, but it's actually real. You can own the New York Stock Exchange, and he does. And all these arguments from, like, I don't know, this is a bit of a tangent, but like from Ted Cruz tweeting, like, we're the party of working people, the Republicans are. It's like, no, you're, and then I think Ken Klippenstein responded by saying, like, your wife is the managing director of Goldman Sachs.
Yep.
Bud, I hate to break it to you, but to get back to this, like, I think that it's going to be very difficult for Ossoff and Warnock to win. They're going to make religious arguments about Warnock being a pro-choice reverend and how that is worse than being a pro-choice secular person. And the only way to fight back is these insider trading things where they let people die as they got rich.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be a bloodbath. But I also think that Georgia going blue is incredibly invigorating for, you know, young people who've been voting for the first time, for people of color and working people who've been long forgotten in Georgia. So I do think it'll be really close and it'll be tough, but I'm interested to see what happens. Meanwhile, I just want to mention that Trump's tweets are not without consequences, and the fact that he has been going after the Secretary of State in Georgia, Raffensperger, has led to death threats. More troubling to Raffensperger were the many threats he and his wife Trisha have received over the past few weeks, a break and enter at another family's home. All of it has prompted him to accept a state security detail. And then he says, quote, if Republicans don't start condemning this stuff, then I think they're really complicit in it. It's time to stand up and be counted. Are you gonna stand for righteousness? Are you gonna stand for integrity? Are you gonna stand for the wild mob? You wanted to condemn the wild mob when it's on the other side, on the left side. What are you gonna do when it's on our side?
Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's amazing. Like, as a progressive, this is how I'm used to the establishment treating me. It's weird that the base of the Republican Party was indulged for so long before someone was like, eh. Now, my arguments are more like, hey, maybe we should give small businesses money to get through this crisis. Maybe yeah. that's something that we should do. And their arguments are like, democracy, who gives a damn? Like, the base of the Republican Party is in crazy town. But like, this is how I'm used to establishment figures talking to me. Now, Raffensperger has two more years on his term. So he's like, I'm just gonna ride it out. I'm not gonna do anything. Does Trump think that Kemp doesn't know what the Georgia Secretary of State can and cannot do? Cause he used to be that. Kemp was the Secretary of State. Right. And Kemp knows exactly what kind of voter suppression you can legally engage in.
Yes.
Because he wiped 300,000 people from the voter rolls, but you gotta do your homework early. That's what's so frustrating about Trump, is like, the entire Republican establishment is like, we turned this paper in 5 years ago. Why are you flailing now? Same thing happened in Pennsylvania. They just had a huge lawsuit thrown out in Pennsylvania because they're trying to fight against a 2019 law in 2020, and the judge is like, you should have done this in 2019. Now it just seems like you lost an election and you're looking for old reasons to turn in.
Yes.
The Republicans are good at this. They are very successful at this. Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, or Michigan, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, all of those states, Democratic state legislatures received more votes in those states, but they are Republican controlled state legislatures because the Republicans do their work ahead of time.
Yep, and they reap gerrymander. Yeah, no, exactly. Karl Rove is just like, look, I swear we're good at rigging elections. We're great at voter suppression. We're super good at voter purging. We're great at gerrymandering. This is not us. This is bad. So yeah, you're absolutely right. They're like, we've done this before. We know how to do this. And they kind of messed up. This ain't us. That's what I think. I think, like, you know, Cheney is sitting there. He's having, like, you know, no heart attacks because he doesn't have a heart anymore. But you know, he's there. He's getting verklempt, or not, you know, he's getting upset because he's like, I could have done this so much better. But no. And now we're off to the runoffs. President-elect Biden continues to nominate officials for his cabinet. Yes, and we're gonna look at the good, the bad, and the Neera Tanden. Yes, so some interesting things is that he's got a communications team made up of all women. We've got Kate Bedingfield, a communications director for Biden, who will take on the same role in the White House. She's already been the communications director. Jen Psaki, you might remember Jen Psaki as Obama's former press secretary. She's overseeing all these confirmation efforts. And Corinne Jean-Pierre, or Jean-Pierre, who will be deputy press secretary, who is a senior advisor on Biden's campaign and chief of staff to Kamala Harris. She's also gonna be part of the communications team. You know, there's some good folks in the, Janet Yellen has been nominated to be Treasury Secretary. I know some people wanted that to be Elizabeth Warren. Some people wanted that to be Bernie Sanders. No, Janet Yellen, all right? Just a solid Janet Yellen. She oversaw the expansion of the economy under Obama. She's not a banker, so that's a win. But a lot of these nominations are very safe. They feel like going back to the Obama years, not a lot of hat tips or gestures to the progressive wing. Definitely more women and more people of color, which does count for something, although questionable when it comes to certain of those choices. like the director of the Office of Management and Budget, who has been selected to be, there we go, that's a sentence, Neera Tanden. Neera Tanden, who's the chief executive of the Center for American Progress, which is a think tank that is consistently called a left-leaning think tank. I'd call it squarely in the middle. But Neera Tanden has served as the leader of the professional home of dozens of Obama era officials, several of whom could end up rejoining the federal government. She's a familiar face to TV news viewers as a frequent guest on national cable and Sunday morning programs. You have also definitely seen Neera Tanden on Twitter. Neera Tanden tweets a lot. She probably will respond to your tweets if you tweet at her. And she has a habit of going after progressives. So she has been a longtime Clinton aide. She worked on the Clinton campaign in 2016. She's an advisor and she stands super hard. And she will mostly punch left toward Bernie Sanders supporters, progressives, even Elizabeth Warren supporters, which has caused a lot of eyebrow raises for her nomination. I don't know, Brett, what are your initial thoughts on this?
Neera Tanden, the experience, let me start with a story about me being in a Tower Records in, I want to say 2003.
Please.
The movie, whenever King Kong came out, King Kong came out and it was the movie with Jack Black. It was directed by Peter Jackson. It was in theaters, it was big. And it was still in theaters and I was checking out buying a CD or something. And there was a grandmother in front of me who was buying a King Kong movie, but it was like the King Kong. And it was a cheap knockoff done by like Asylum Pictures. And that's the same, and I was like, oh, that's a shame. You think this is what your kid wants. That's the same feeling that I have when watching Biden choose progressives for his cabinet. You're just like, I wonder what you think I want. Do you think I, like, just because progress is in the name of Center for American Progress, do you think you're giving us a progressive? Because you're giving us Neera Tanden, who there's a great write-up in the Daily Poster by Walker Bragman that points out like tweets like this where she says, chain CPI, again, a policy I disagree with, helped Social Security solvency not hurt it. So again, fix your tweet, which is like they threw her and was she with it, against it? It's like this wishy-washy thing, but like chain CPI was a way to like, you can't, it's terrible marketing of like chaining the consumer price index, I think it was what it's, yeah, consumer price index, to like just reduce Social Security payments.
Yeah.
And that being like your solution, it's just not the right solution. And is the Neera Tanden choice what they think is the gift to progressives? Because
is this the King Kong poster? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, is she giving a, and we asked for King Kong the movie, they're giving us the King Kong, which isn't it. And I'm like, I just wanted the thing I asked for.
Do you
think you're giving me the thing I want? And do you think I'm gonna politely just say, wow, thanks, it's the thought that counts?
Yeah, no. I love Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
This is a great movie. No, and it is true. It's hard to imagine that they don't know how much she likes to punch left at progressives. And the fact that, and we know over the years, she has the Center for American Progress and she at the helm have been against things like raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. She said things like, we should invade Libya because we've got a deficit, they've got oil, I think was the quote.
Yeah.
Center for American Progress also not clear. In fact, I believe has been on the no side of Medicare for all, not for good reasons. But I really consider Neera Tanden to be the custodian of the status quo. Just someone who will put an invisible line in between what she thinks is possible and what we know is necessary. And that is the role that she has served as helm of this think tank, this major think tank that gets called left leaning, but again, really is just moderate and really is just centrist. It doesn't bode so well for, you know, the rest of the administration. At the same time, she's hated by the right. So here's this tweet from Drew Brandieu, who says, Neera Tanden has an endless stream of disparaging comments about the Republican senators whose vote she'll need to get confirmation and stands zero chance of being confirmed. There is someone who isn't from the right, who has a little bit of a different perspective than Brett Ehrlich and myself, which is Mr. Cenk Uygur. I think you guys all know him. He says, Neera Tanden has been waiting for this appointment for 4 unending years now. All of her hard work inside the establishment paid off. Now she's in a power position to help direct the world's largest resources. Now we're going to find out who she is, and so is she rooting for her.
This trended last night. Everyone thought this was an earnest tweet from Cenk being like, let's see how Neera Tanden shakes out. And I read that and I was like, yeah, real rooting for her to see who she is when you already know. It's so weird. Yesterday, Cenk was tweeting for two different tweets that people absolutely misinterpreted. It was hilarious. Yesterday, he was like, he was talking to like MAGA chuds who were saying that Hillary Clinton rigged the 2020 election for Biden. And he was like, so she rigged it for Biden, but not herself? Is that your argument? Like, why would she rig an election she wasn't involved in, you dumb, dumb idiots? And everyone's like, well, why are you not defending Bernie? It's like, he did that in the beginning of that tweet, you dipsh.
No, and then so this funny. And this tweet this. Is like, yes, reading it at face value, it drips with sarcasm, all the unending work inside the establishment. And he's absolutely right. You know, she has been working toward this moment. I think the questionable part was like rooting for her.
Good luck. Rooting that she figures out. This is sarcastic in my reading.
I think it is sarcastic now that I read it again, but I absolutely, you know, he's obviously not wrong. And now, yeah, we do know who she is. She's going to probably require a whole lot of pushing. And again, I'm not someone who says it's done. Oh, we've pushed the Biden administration. They're done. They're unpushable. No, I think that's BS. I think it makes sense. Sadly, it makes sense that someone like Neera Tanden was elected. I actually just think on a pure HR level, on a pure liability level, the fact that you tweet that much, it's like, how many times have you put your foot in your mouth? How many times are you going to put your foot in your mouth? I don't believe in like digging up tweets and canceling people, but this is clearly someone who is so attracted to drama and loves to jump into it that like, don't you think you need someone maybe a little bit more even keeled at the helm of the Office of Management and Budget, you know, rather than someone who will just get baited into any kind of argument?
Yeah. And there's a whole stupid politics aspect to it. It's just stupid politics. Here's what frequently I think happens is, and I think Cenk pointed this out in a different tweet, but essentially there are people who are like, I am going to fight outright every step of the way for progressive goals, and you need them and I respect it. And that's one way to do it. And that might be the most respectable thing to do. There's other folks who are like, I've got to be strategic and I got to work my way up through the establishment to make the changes I want to see in the world. And people do that. And sometimes, you know, there are folks that make the beeline and find the right or at least the right angle to get in and affect change. AOC is one of them. I want to get in, you know, she's not one of those folks who are like, let's just screw it all and do it all from the outside. She's like, I want to run for Congress. I want to affect change. Neera Tanden, incidentally, I believe thinks she is AOC when she tweets. Like she thinks she totally nails it and she can't. She doesn't have the skill and it's fine. Not everybody, I don't have the skill. A lot of people don't have the skill. So there's that. But what ends this, the stupid politics aspect is people who believe they're going in and working their way through the establishment are gonna get called out by people who are on the outside being like, don't cave for a second, don't compromise, don't do anything.
Right.
If they really believe in the progressive goal, they can't let the calling out of themselves from people in the like purest aspect of the party to get them pissy, for lack of a better word. Like so frequently, like here's what happens. People make their way through. They're like, I was fighting for progressive change, but y'all are making this so frustrating for me that when I finally get to the position of power, I'm tempted to say, screw it. I like this job. I get to be the OMB director. And this is the giving the benefit of the benefit of the benefit of the doubt to Neera Tanden. Like, in the best possible interpretation of everything she's done, something that she's given us a lot of evidence not to believe, but let's say we believed it for a second already, you've pissed off all the purists by doing that, qualifying it that much. But now what I think Neera Tanden would do if she was that golden secret progressive that everybody wanted her to be, I think she's just a little like, you guys are annoying. So I'm not going to do it because you made me not. Because you were
Bernie bros made me not give you healthcare. That is mean Bernie bros on Twitter are the reason we can't have a Green New Deal. So again, I think she is definitely sort of a yes woman of the status quo. Yeah, I hope she's not. I hope she fancies herself an AOC. I also don't really know how much the OMB does. I guess I've been, I guess it's important.
Well, let's just say
that the OMB doesn't operate on their own.
Mick Mulvaney did it while being chief of staff.
Right. Like the current director of the OMB is someone I've never heard. It's something like Richard Kraust or Cruz or Krusley.
Cruz.
And the fact that I've never heard that name for me is like a plus because it means less evil. Like we've all heard of Stephen Miller. You know, we all heard of Scott Perdue when he was in. We all heard of, you know, Ryan Zinke. Like all these crooks have come and gone. We've heard of these people, but I never heard of this guy. So I'm like, hey, maybe that means it doesn't have that much power. Yeah. I've never, if it's not Chad Wolf, then maybe it's okay.
I think it's very, it's a think tanky thing. They're the ones that OMB looks at it and says, how much will this actually cost us? That's what that's what I've seen the OMB, like, oh, the real effect from the, you know, independent off, you know, OMB is that it'll cost $70 trillion over 700 years. Like that's what they do. So we'll see. And a think tanky person in charge of that, they probably thought made sense and they needed to give her something because she was in the establishment wing working for people. And I know there's people in the Twitch chat who are earlier saying like Andrew Yang will get something. And that's interesting. But Andrew Yang, I think, was just the person who was a viable presidential candidate who will go on TV. And then, and he's, I think he's working to be that guy who fights for, you know, at least his version of what he thinks is progressive change from the inside. And we'll see how that pans out.
Andrew Yang just wants $1,000 a month for himself and whoever is going to pay that is fine. You know, he just wants to make sure he's got the cushy job forever. At least it's only $1,000. In fact, I don't think Andrew Yang should make more than $1,000 a month. That's just my personal view. I would like to see where the universal basic income discussion goes, especially with a recession, especially with the lack of action from Republicans. Is it the one thing that the left and the right can agree on? Will we get that before we get any kind of other relief? I don't
Francesca, know. 80% of people want more gun control. 65% of people want Medicare for all. There are so many things that most Americans agree on that don't become law. And I guarantee you the, you know, for what my word is worth, or my predictions are worth, I guarantee you this will all disappear when we start giving vaccines out. Period.
Yeah, maybe. I hope my vaccine comes with a King Kong poster. I want that. Don't slight me, Matthew Broderick. Brett Ehrlich, thank you for joining me on this fantastic Monday. Combined with what are your Fridays called again?
Drunkle. I'm the drunkle.
Garbage Fridays.
I don't have like a fun
garbage Friday.
Butthole Brett Fridays. I don't know. Brett. What is it, Sophie? What is it called?
Butthole but Brett Fridays.
But don't.
How dare you? All right, Brett, be well. And thank you so much for joining me. And thank you all out there for lifting me through this difficult time when I've had to host without Dragon Daddy around. Ken Clive, thank you for your super chat. You say, I'm not that worried about Biden's cabinet picks. Progressive game gave Trumpies a reality check this election and we will give Biden administration the same through consistent and strong advocacy. Sometimes I can read and sometimes I can't. That is very, very true, I think, Ken Clive. The idea is to give a resounding defeat to this little orange fashy poo. So we're doing it, we're trying. And thank you all, remember to share the stream. I don't know, share the clips. What do we do at the end? I never know because I'm never here.
Yeah, I know, so, John literally kicks me off the call.
I know, he kicks me off, so I don't know how to, do I just turn my back?
Yeah, you turn your back on the audience. You put your shoe, you give him the profile. Give him the profile, let's give him the, oh, I gotta go this way.
I gotta go, bye.
Now we're just like a weird German show. Goodbye. Hello. This was fun.
I've had fun.
You have done great work, everybody, together.
Thank you for joining me. Oh, let me go here because it is better. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.